Good morning, Dr. Ross. I trust you are well today.
I'm fine, thanks, Brent. Lovely to talk to you, mate.
We're going
to
do some questions today. We've had lots of people sending in Dr. Ross questions, so I thought we've got a couple of topics. If we get to it, we do. Otherwise, let's just go ahead and do listener questions, okay?
Yep, absolutely.
Dr. Ross, what does it mean? This is from John. What does it mean if you have a blood test that shows your is it homocysteine level?
Yeah, homocysteine.
Homocysteine level at 11. Is the increased levels due to taking high levels of vitamin C supplements?
No, it's got nothing to do with it. Let me just explain this to you. There's a gene called the MTHFR gene, and that stands for methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase. And 50% of the population, Brent, have a mutation in this gene. And there's two main types. There's either the C mutation or the A mutation. Now, below the age of 50, it has no major influence on homocysteine levels. But if you have that MTHFR gene and you're, say, a 35-year-old woman trying to conceive, it might be difficult for you to conceive. I'll give you the solution in a second. But I'm just giving the background to this. Also, there is a link between having this MTHFR gene abnormality and some forms of mental health issues below the age of 50. But once you get to 50 and the hormones wear out, and as I say, you hit 50 and you lose your hormones and all the degenerative diseases like heart disease, cancer, Alzheimer's start to increase, this homocysteine level may become an important thing because the MTHFR gene then drives up a homocysteine, which is a toxic amino acid that can damage the lining of blood vessels as you get older. So the solution to this now is to lower homocysteine with a combination of B vitamins. And here's the problem. We've all heard of folic acid, and we all know that folic acid in big doses can prevent things like spina bifida. But the reason why some mothers have a child with spina bifida is they have this MTHFR gene abnormality, they conceive. And because they've got the MTHFR gene abnormality, they're not feeding the right type of folate, which is the dietary form of folic acid, into the baby, and the baby can be born with these neurologic problems. But let's get back to the more common issue. As we all get older, if we've got this abnormality, and 50% of us do, up goes the homocysteine level, and it damages the lining of blood vessels, so sets you up for more cardiovascular disease, Alzheimer's and possibly Parkinson's and a few other things that go with it, clotting, etc. So just recently there has been, and I can't mention the product as I always say on air, but there's been a fourth generation folic acid, which is otherwise known as the glucosamine salt of 5'-methyltetrahydrofolate, which then targets, it goes beyond that mutation and drops your homocysteine levels and reduces your vascular risk. And it's really interesting because there's a little-known university in England called Oxford where they've been doing a couple of trials around the use of B-group vitamins for people with cognitive impairment and found that the combination of folic acid, B12 and B6 reduced the progression to dementia by about 30% of people, by about 30% in people who had mild cognitive impairment who took these three supplements. And I think the big issue, and the reason why this is not showing across the board around the world why taking multivitamins is good for you, is because we've been using standard folic acid, which doesn't work for 50% of the population because it doesn't get past this block of this mutation I'm talking about. Now we've got this newer form of folic acid, this fourth generation folic acid. It bypasses that, down goes the homocysteine. So John is correct in saying, is homocysteine an issue, but it's not driven up by vitamin C supplements at all.
So if John buys this particular form of folic acid and takes that with the other supplements you mentioned in your answer, that will help him.
Absolutely, absolutely. And see, here's the issue. We realize this now, that as people get older and they say, oh, I'll start taking multivitamin because it's going to help me, the 50% of people that have this mutation get in their bloodstream what we call unmetabolized folic acid, which is actually toxic to nerves and toxic to your immune system. And so this is why one study showed where they gave people a milligram a day of folic acid in a thing called the aspirin polyp study. And they found that the men in that study who took the standard folic acid, not the new one, had three times the rate of prostate cancer. And I believe the reason is this unmetabolized folic acid, because you have the mutation, damage your immune system and increase your risk for a very common form of cancer. So it's a very, very complex subject. And I'll give a shameless plug for a new podcast that I've started doing called the Seriously Funny Wellbeing Podcast. And my latest podcast goes into this very extensively. So if people are interested, Google Seriously Funny Wellbeing Podcast, have a listen, it's for free, and you'll hear me talking and explaining all of this very, very intricately.
However, on that podcast, you are also not able to say what the name of this particular folic acid is. Am I correct in saying that?
Absolutely, and I don't say what the name of it is. So if anyone's interested, they can ask you and I can give you the name, but I can't say it on air.
I've already got it. So Ross has given me the name of that particular folic acid. If you want it, dare I say it, send me an email and I will send you the name of this folic acid and you can go out and you can buy it. If you've been taking the old folic acid and you stop, how long does it take for that to get out of your system?
I think it would take probably, because it's water soluble, it would go out pretty quickly. But if you keep taking the stuff, then it has that toxic effect. So, look, it's my feeling that all multivitamins now should be made with this new generation folic acid, because the evidence is overwhelming for what it does.
How important is it for people over the age of 50 to take folic acid as a supplement?
Well, again, the 50% of people that that have the mutation, I think it's very important. But the best way to get any good micronutrient, like a vitamin, a mineral, or trace metal, is to have what I talk about all the time, 2 or 3 pieces of fruit per day, 3 to 5 servings of vegetables per day, and leafy green vegetables have the highest content of folate. Folate is not folic acid. It's folate, which is the dietary component of B9, which is folate.
How do you find out if you have this mutation, if you're part of the 50% that do or 50% that don't? Is it a simple blood test?
Simple blood test, just have the MTHFR gene tested. And look, you can do that, or you can just take the fourth generation folic acid. Either way it works.
Terry says, it's a quick question, mate. What causes an increase of iron in the blood?
Now, this is what we call ferritin. Now, ferritin is the name for iron storage protein. So it's not actually iron itself, it's the iron storage. So when you have what we call iron studies, you get in at the iron levels, you have what's called the total iron binding capacity, and you get the iron saturation, and you get the ferritin. So it's a complex look at your iron there. Now, firstly, if the ferritin levels are very high, so the normal range is about 30 to 300, but just say your ferritin levels are over 1,000, you probably have one of the genes for a condition called hemochromatosis. Now, basically, hemochromatosis is a disorder of the gut where you overabsorb iron. So we normally take in, say, a few milligrams a day of iron, and that is selectively absorbed across the gut. But if you've got a defect in the gut, you're getting too much iron into the system. And when that happens, it can stay in your liver, your pancreas, your pituitary gland, cause a whole lot of things. And hemochromatosis is a dreadful condition if it's not treated. Now, strangely, the way hemochromatosis is treated is by having about one pack of blood or 500 mils taken off once every 3 months, which gets the iron out of the body. But that's a relatively uncommon condition. Many people carry one of the genes, but you've got to have a couple of the genes at a very high level to get this full-blown hemochromatosis. The commonest cause of a slightly high iron level is having a degree of fatty liver, which 1 in 4 people have, and that drives up the ferritin level as well as maybe giving you some minor abnormalities in liver function. Alcohol can do it. And also a high ferritin level, we call in medicine a thing called an acute phase reactant. So, for example, if you get some acute infection or some inflammation in the body, that can also drive up the iron levels as well. So there's a whole lot of reasons for it. And the first thing is not to panic, because it's not particularly serious. But if the ferritin's very, very high, you probably need to have a full blood workup for this hemochromatosis gene, which is just a simple blood test like the MTHFR gene. and then the doctor can manage it appropriately from there.
Is there a test you can take to tell you whether you have inflammation in your body?
Yeah, well, there's a basic, there's two basic tests that we do very often, a thing called HSCRP, which stands for highly sensitive C-reactive protein. And so I'll give you an example. I've just come off having a bit of a cold or respiratory tract infection. So if I had a normal CRP 0 to 5, if I had my CRP done now, it'd probably be about 10. But if you have, say, acute COVID where you're really, really ill, you know, the initial, to quote the Donald, the China virus, so the initial Wuhan strain, I would see some patients who have acute COVID under those circumstances, their CRP was 350 to 400. Or acute influenza, it might go up to 350. Pneumonia, 200 to 300. If you had acute leukemia, it might be 150. An autoimmune disease like lupus or polymyalgia rheumatica, it might be up to 100. But a minor viral illness or a bit of arthritis might drive it to 10 or 15. So HSCRP is a good screening test to see whether there's a small amount or a lot of inflammation. And when people are perfectly well and they just have their CRPs done just to see what their immune system's doing, I like the CRP to sit below 1.5, which means their immune system's working very, very well. There's another test called ESR, which stands for erythrocyte sedimentation rate, which also goes up with inflammation as well. So often you can do the two tests when you're looking for something like that. So I mentioned before a condition called polymyalgia rheumatica, which is a very common autoimmune disease. As people get older, they get really stiff and pain in their proximal muscles around their shoulders and around their hips. When they wake up in the morning, they can hardly get out of bed, and it takes them half an hour to an hour to lose that stiffness. And when you do their ESR levels, which should be below about 20, often they're sitting around 100, and the CRP is about the same as well. So yes, we can do simple tests to measure inflammation in the body.
George asks, is there a danger in taking too much vitamin C? He said, I have an orange every morning for breakfast and then a teaspoon of vitamin C powder.
Look, I don't think there is for most people, but we just mentioned the ferritin, the high levels of iron. If you have one of the genes for the high levels of iron, taking the vitamin C can markedly increase your absorption of iron. So I often say to people who are iron deficient, and once we've sorted out the reason for their iron deficiency, if I put them on oral iron, I also say take some vitamin C with it because it will make your iron levels go higher. But I think for most of us, taking some vitamin C every day is a good thing to do. There's the cause of 1 in 5 cases of heart disease is a thing called lipoprotein little a, and that's something that I've been measuring in my patients for the last 30 years. Doctors have only started looking at it for the last 2 or 3 years because we're now developing drugs to lower this thing in the bloodstream to see whether it actually stops people having heart disease. Now, a fellow who, I'll ask you a question, Brent, who is the only person in the history of the world who's won 2 unshared Nobel Prizes?
I have no idea.
It's Professor Linus Pauling, and he won 1 Nobel Prize for molecular biochemistry and another one for peace. And Professor Pauling came out 50 years ago and said that lipoprotein delay was the major cause of heart disease, and everyone thought he was a lunatic. And he said the treatment of it is high-dose vitamin C. So I've been using the Pauling technique for the last 30 years in my patients, vitamin C, vitamin E, and lysine. A couple of grams a day of vitamin C. Linus Pauling used to tell people to take 6 to 8 grams a day of vitamin C. And none of them came to much harm. There's some doctors who believe that vitamin C in high doses can cause a higher rate of kidney stones. I don't believe that, but some people do. And some people who take higher doses of vitamin C do get diarrhea because it irritates the gut. Here's the thing in life. Everything's on a bell-shaped curve. Some people are really tall. Some people are really short. Most of us are somewhere in the middle. Same thing with intelligence. Some people are super intelligent, genius levels. Other people are bone stupid, but most people are somewhere in the middle. And so it's the same thing with your response to things like vitamin C or vitamin E or anything else. There are genetic factors. There are other factors that might make it good or bad. But in most cases, people can take what George is taking. Oranges are the best way of getting vitamin C, but I don't mind people supplementing on top of that as well.
Mark says, I'm 65 years of age and weigh 100 kilos. I've been diagnosed with an enlarged prostate. Why when I get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, do I stand there for sometimes minutes before I'm able to pee? I'm smiling because been there, done that.
But let me say, the reason for this is that the way the whole prostate system works, and a lot of people get this wrong, the testicles make sperm, the prostate makes semen, which is the delivery system for sperm. And the prostate sits around the outlet of the bladder, which we call the urethra. So the urethra goes into the penis, of course, and that you pass urine out through the penis. So if your prostate is swollen, which as you get older, especially if you're carrying a lot of weight, there's a link between that and prostate cancer and prostate enlargement. But again, there's also a link with sexual activity. So the more people empty their prostate through sexual activity, the smaller their prostate is, which is a healthy thing to do. So as you get older and that activity drops off a bit, the prostate swells and blocks the outlet of the bladder. So when you start to pass urine, especially in the middle of the night, it's hard to get things moving because there's an obstruction there for the outlet of the bladder. That's the reason.
Is there something, as in a supplement, you can take to assist that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Look, there's a lot of things that can be done for a swollen prostate. The first I've already mentioned, empty it regularly, at least once a week over the age of 60. And you do that's your own business. But I'm saying that should be emptied regularly. That's number one. Number two, there's a whole lot of prostate herbs, and there's a whole lot of different products, of course, I can't mention the name, but things that have saw palmetto, epilobium, all of these different things can help shrink down the prostate to some extent. We have very effective medications that can do it. There's a drug called an old style blood pressure drug called Minipress or Prazosin. There's these newer drugs, Flomaxdra or Duodart, that also shrink down the prostate. And there are many procedures that can be done to help shrink the prostate. In the old days, when I started medicine 45 years ago, there was a procedure called transurethral resection of the prostate, which is still done, but it has a very high rate of impotence and incontinence after it. Now there's a lot more sophisticated techniques. I interviewed a fellow on my radio show called Professor Gordon O'Neill from St. Vincent's Hospital, is doing a thing called a prostatic urolift. There's also, this is really interesting, when people have angiograms, they typically go in through either the wrist or the groin, and then the catheter goes up to the heart and they squirt dye through the heart. Well, there's a thing called prostatic artery embolization where they put the angiogram in through the artery and the groin. Instead of going up, they go down and they inject stuff into the prostatic arteries, which block the arteries off and the prostate shrinks down without having to have an operation. So there is a lot of things happening in this space. But the important thing is, as Mark's asked the question, do not suffer in silence. Speak to your doctor about it, and there's a lot of things that can be suggested for you.
John says, this will be our last question. I'll let you go then, Ross. John says, I heard you talking several weeks ago about the side effects of Ozempic, and you mentioned one of the side effects of Viagra was the same as that of Ozempic, and it could be that you go blind in one eye. Have you had any of your patients suffer from this side effect?
Yeah, what I was talking about there is a thing that's called non-arteritic optic neuropathy. And so it's not an inflammation in the eye, but I think because of the dilatation that's induced by these drugs, that it can sometimes block off. The blood vessels get too big and sort of block each other off. That's my potential explanation for all this. I've used a lot of Viagra in patients. I've used a fair bit of Ozempic up to this point. I have never seen it once. But you see, this is the problem. I've got one patient, for example. I'm a great believer in a drug called nicotinic acid, which is an activated form of vitamin B3 that I take every day as an anti-aging drug. But I've seen one patient of all the patients I've been using this on who've had a similar sort of problem taking this nicotinic acid, because like Viagra, it is a vasodilator. And these are just really, really rare side effects. But it gets back to what we've been saying here. You line up 100 people, you give them any medications or any natural therapies, 90 think you're a genius and 10 want to throw it at you. Because there's about a 10% side effect rate for all drugs. But the rare side effects such as this non-arteritic optic neuropathy are very, very rare, but they still can occur. And that's the problem with any medical procedure, any medical treatment. The fine print stuff can still cause a problem very, very rarely.
If you've taken one dose of Viagra and you've had none of these side effects, does that mean that you're free, you're okay, you can keep taking Viagra, or could it happen on the 22nd time that you've taken Viagra, for example?
Absolutely. And this is the problem with anything. And you say to yourself, doctors will say, oh, you've got a side effect of the drug, but I didn't have it yesterday, doctor. It's got to happen at some time if it happens. But as I said, the chance of it happening is very rare, and it may just be a cumulative thing. People use it for a long time. Or it may never, well, the usual thing is it will never happen, but it can happen. So it's just like everything you do in life is risk-benefit. So if you, for example, if you were very, very neurotic, you'd never go outside your house because there are so many risks that can happen. And I say to people, look, you have much more risk getting in your car and driving to the appointment to see me today than you have from taking this medication.
We'll let you go. Thank you so much for doing this listener question situation. We'll do it again maybe next week because we have just received so many questions. And I suppose a lot of them were the guys today. Maybe we'll do the girls next week, Ross.
Yeah, whatever you like, mate. It's just always a pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise. Look after yourself. Stay healthy as you do. And enjoy the rest of your weekend, mate. And we'll catch up with you next weekend.
Thanks, mate.